This is the State of Things from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Frank Stachow. Best friends are the constant in many people's lives. They rescue each other after the car breaks down, they join in on late-night quests for fast food, and they console and support one another in a time of need. These best buddy relationships have been fodder for movie plot lines for decades, and they exist, frankly, in all genres. In this month's Movies on the Radio, we're talking about your favorite buddy films, from romantic comedies like Some Like It Hot to dramas like Beaches and sci-fi flicks like A Boy and His Dog. Joining me, as they do each month, are movie experts Marcia Gordon, the film professor at North Carolina State University. Welcome back, Marcia.
Thank you so much.
And Laura Boies, film curator at the North Carolina Museum of Art. Hello, Laura.
Hey, great to see you.
Good to see you. We got a wide range of responses for this month's movies.
Yes.
On the Radio highlights many of the kinds of buddy films. Marcia, tell us a little bit about the genre. How far back does it go, and kind of what are we talking about here?
Well, I wouldn't consider it a genre per se, but I mean, I think it's interesting when we think about, well, Hollywood history in particular, you think about romance, heterosexual romance, a guy and a girl, and over the course of the film, they get together or things fall apart. So that's, you know, where a lot of the energy of Hollywood history resides in terms of relationships. But I think there's an equally important strain of films about friendships. And, you know, obviously there's all kinds of genres in which this happens. The war film is a perfect example, right, where you get a lot of male friendship in particular. The road movie it would be another example. So, you know, I think it's just, it's one of those relationships that there are great stories to tell about.
Well, one of the questions that I was asked was, does a buddy film have to have an adventure in it? Can it just be a portrayal of, you know, everyday friendship? Does that make it a buddy movie? And the other question my husband asked me, so Sherlock Holmes and Dr. Watson, is that like a buddy relationship?
That's hard to...
I was like, I don't know about that. I guess it depends on the iteration.
Right.
And yeah, and the year that it was made. Well, that does raise the question about how unconventional these can be. And along those lines, let's listen to what our first listener had to say about his pick for a buddy flick.
My name is Craig Braden. I live in Durham, North Carolina. And my favorite buddy film is Casablanca, because I think that the relationship that Humphrey Bogart has with Claude Rains transcends the other stories by having a certain warmth and wit that none of the other characters have between them. And that relationship builds up until the final scene of the movie when Rick shoots Major Strasse.
Get away from that phone. I would advise you not to interfere.
I was willing to shoot Captain Reno, and I'm willing to shoot you.
Hello. Put that phone down. Get me the radio tower. Put it down.
Major Strasse has been shot. Round up the usual suspects.
Rather than turning in this friend of his, it's sort of grown in their relationship through the movie in kind of a transactional way. At the end of the movie, it sort of grows into something else, which is why there's that great last line in Casablanca.
Louis, I think this is the beginning of a beautiful friendship.
That, to me, is sort of my favorite moment in a movie that has a lot of great moments.
That's a clip of the 1942 film Casablanca, one of our listeners' favorite best buddy films, here with movie experts Marcia Gordon and Laura Boies. And I guess, yeah, this very much qualifies.
Yeah, I think absolutely. I mean, I think the fact that Casablanca ends with these two male friends, Bogart and Rains, walking off, you know, together at the end of the film suggests something about the kind of forward trajectory of the story. And there's so much tension in this film, you know, in the love triangle with Ingrid Bergman, and you know, that Bogart kind of shuttles her off at the end of the story, and then it's left in this kind of unconventional alliance between these two men for a political cause.
Yeah.
Well, the most unconventional thing is that it's a rare friendship between a starring and a featured player. I mean, rarely yeah. Is there that class crossover in the Hollywood hierarchy.
Yeah, that's a good point.
Well, and they also, I mean, it's a little bit about, as you say, the whole trajectory of this film is a very conventional kind of romantic trauma. triangle, where, you know, we all know that story. And then it ends with this whole question about how we can make the relationship along the way, how it begins as this commodified, you know, for a very tense relationship. Mm-hmm. And as we get to know each other, the bond of trust that they built turns out to be the thing that was being made right before your very eyes.
Mm-hmm. Well, and I just taught a film in my studio era Hollywood class called The Hitchhiker, directed by Ida Lupino, one of the only women directing in Hollywood in the studio era. And it ends very similarly, which is the two men who are the survivors of the film kind of walk off together. So this is not the only film in which the kind of relationship, friendship between men is the privileged relationship.
Well, our next clip comes from Laura Boys, the 1959 film The Some Like It Hot. Tell us more about it.
Well, this is a pretty famous comedy, probably about number one on the AFI list of great comedies, in which Tony Curtis and Jack Lemmon witness the St. Valentine's Day Massacre in Chicago and have to go undercover in drag in an all-girl orchestra.
Let's hear a clip.
Everything under control?
Have I got things to tell you?
What happened?
I'm engaged.
Congratulations. Who's the lucky girl?
I am.
What?
Osgood proposed to me. We're planning a June wedding.
What are you talking about? You can't marry Osgood.
You think he's too old for me?
Jerry, you can't be serious.
Why not? He keeps marrying girls all the time.
But you're not a girl, you're a guy. And why would a guy want to marry a guy?
Security.
Jerry, you better lie down. You're not well.
Will you stop treating me like a child? I'm not stupid. I know there's a problem.
I'll say there is.
His mother. We need her approval.
Jerry, there's another problem.
Like what?
Like what are you going to do on your honeymoon?
We've been discussing that. He wants to go to the Riviera, but I kind of lean towards Niagara Falls.
Well, one of the things about this movie is that another theme that you see is there's one dominant friend and then one friend that kind of goes along. And Jack Lemmon is the go-along friend until he meets the man of his dreams, a millionaire. But the one thing that really struck me when I was looking for clips is like, wait a minute. The state legislature thinks this is what a transgender person is, that he's Tony Curtis in a dress trying to kiss Marilyn Monroe. It's their only
in the
role
bathroom.
Model. In the
right.
bathroom, right? It's their only role model.
And their reference points go back to 1959. Everyone
which is perfect
right
for the mindset.
Year.
Yeah.
Well,
and also, I think there are so many comedies about friendship, in particular male friendship, you know, and that goes to the present day where that dynamic between friends trying to survive some hilarious situation is what ties the characters together. And sometimes there are very earnest ideas about friendship that are buried within the comedy.
We're talking about buddy films today on Movies on the Radio on The State of Things. Laura Boys and Marcia Gordon are with me as always. We do it once a month. We'll talk about unconventional relationships. Here's another one from 1969. The film is Midnight Cowboy.
My name is Wynn Gardner. I live in Durham, North Carolina. My favorite buddy movie is Midnight Cowboy. It stars John Voight as a male prostitute and Dustin Hoffman as a down-on-his-luck street hustler. It's not the typical feel-good buddy movie that the term is associated with. Rather, it is a dark and deeply disturbing drama about the development of the relationship of two men who are considered to be the dregs of society. It is a story about loss and the redemptive power of love.
Miami Beach, that's where you could score. Anybody can score there, even you. In New York, no rich lady with any class at all buys that cowboy crap anymore. They're laughing at you on the street.
Ain't nobody laughing at me on the street.
Behind your back, I seen them laughing at you, fella.
Oh, what the hell do you know about women anyway? When's the last time you scored, boy?
That's a matter, I only talk about a confession. We're not talking about me now.
Well, when's the last time you've been to confession?
It's between me and my confessor. And I'll tell you another thing. Frankly, you're beginning to smell. And for a stud in New York, that's a handicap.
What Midnight Cowboy has meant to me since I first saw the movie in 1969, when I was a mere lad of 19, is that every person, no matter what station in life, deserves to be treated with dignity and respect, if at all possible.
1969 movie Midnight Cowboy, buddy flick on the state of things today. Yeah.
That's a very powerful reaction to that film. It would be interesting to know how many people came out of watching that movie with that idea, because who needs friends more than people living on the margins of society?
I was a mere boy of 17 when I saw it dozens of times, only because my job was as an usher at Lowe's Buffalo Theater. And so literally this was a film that didn't go away in a week, because that's all we were showing at the time. And this thing was up for weeks and weeks and weeks, and I saw it dozens of times. And I realized at the age of 17 that this may be one of the greatest love stories I have ever witnessed. And I, you know, I had to question myself, because it was between two men, and it was intimate, and not as intimate as the book, it turns out. But it struck me right away as a remarkable and touching love story in a way that I had never seen romance on the screen before.
Yeah.
It's so funny. All of these are male friendships that we've been talking about so far, with a greater or lesser degree of homoeroticism.
Well, at that, and the fact that men can, and I think it's probably the only way that Hollywood could do this, right? I mean, that was their problem, is that it's easy to show romance and friendship the other way, because everybody gets it.
And there are so many. I'm thinking about Warner Brothers in the 20s and 30s, especially did a lot of friendship films between women, you know, backstagers and, you know, films about women trying to kind of support each other, and even when they were catty to each other as they tried to navigate the world during the Depression.
You wonder if the legislature would try to ban Midnight Cowboy in the state now. You never know.
Let's not ask.
Let's not put that question to them.
Instead,
we will change the tone when we come back on the State of Things with film experts Laura Boys, Marcia Gordon, going to talk to me about your favorite buddy films, and we'll continue that conversation on the State of Things from North Carolina Public Radio, a broadcast service of the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill. Please stay with us. This is the State of Things, broadcasting from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Frank Stasio, and today, movies on the radio, talking about your favorite best buddy films throughout the decades. I'm here with movie experts Marcia Gordon from NC State and Laura Boys from the North Carolina Museum of Art. Let's start with a clip from the 1974 film California Split.
My name is Carlos Case. I live in Wilmington, North Carolina, and I'm partial to buddy films of the 1970s. Early performances by Al Pacino and Gene Hackman and Elliot Gould in movies like California Split, movies that both have this incredible kind of grit to them and this freewheeling camaraderie between men who kind of face these ridiculous scenarios, and they're down in their luck and they're in and out of jail, and they end up sort of just barely making it through because of their friendships.
$20 says you can't name the seven dwarfs.
Okay. I know I can name three or four of them, but now you got to be able to seven of them, okay?
I got seven.
Doc.
That's one.
Dopey.
It's two.
Snoopy.
There is no Snoopy.
There ain't no Snoopy. No, that's what I get. Okay, I know there's Doc, there's Dopey, there's Grumpy, there's...
You don't have $20 here.
Wait a second. I got $20 right here. Right. Well, come on. I need a little help here. What about...
Here comes seven like a Gatling gun.
Okay. You're seven ready? Dwarfs. Okay. I'm ready.
Sleepy, Grumpy, Doc.
That's four.
That's three.
Oh. I'm with you.
Okay. Wait a second now. There's Sleepy, Grumpy, Doc.
Right. Sleepy, Grumpy, Dopey.
Dopey.
We got Dumbo.
There's no Dumbo.
Dumbo wasn't in that cast?
No Dumbo.
Gotcha.
1974 flick, California Split, one of our listeners' favorite best buddy films. I'm here with Marcia Gordon and Laura Boys. And this is a kind of a certain aesthetic in the buddy film. This is a kind of a theme, this banter comes up over and over again.
Yes, of course, Robert Altman liked to keep a very loose set. He had actors with whom he felt a great affinity. Of course, Elliot Gould was in MASH with Donald Sutherland, kind of started this. But California Split is a gambling movie, and I get too stressed out watching any movies about gambling. I cannot stand to watch people lose, and I'm not happy when they win. So regardless of the expert banter and the delightful comic performances, I cannot hack this.
Well, I agree with the caller that the 70s, it's like this golden age of male friendship films. And I think about something like John Cassavetes' Husbands and, you know, these directors who were really interested in exploring the idea of male friendship often doing nothing. I mean, really, nothing really happens in California Split. It's a gambling movie, but it's, you know, that's only nominally part of the story. It's more about them just kind of hanging out and helping each other and having these little adventures together. And so, I mean, I can't think of another decade where there were that many films focused on male relationships.
And how much of that is the coincidence of that kind of theme? Because if you talk about male buddies, you know, male bonding, this kind of byplay, the snappy byplay is essential to it, right? I mean, that's what characterizes it. And in the 70s, a lot more experimentation with, you know, ad-libbing and this kind of verite techniques that were also kind of big in the 70s. So it seems to me the two ideas came together pretty well.
Well, I think if you think about the history of the kind of snappy dialogue and something like screwball comedies of the 1930s, those were all heterosexual romantic films, that was where the primary energy was, even if there was a friendship, a rivalry within them, which there often was. And so it's interesting to see that kind of remade in the 1970s in the context of friendship, that it's still based on that kind of witty, but it's not that same kind of fast-paced cracking, every line's loaded. I mean, that scene goes on and on and on.
Do you know to what extent in the 30s that was all scripted and how much ad-libbing went on?
It was scripted.
It was scripted.
And I think, weren't we in the 70s a lot more experimentation and directors like Altman were giving actors a little more license?
Well, the 70s were more aimless in general. So it kind of just reflects a world view.
Right.
I mean, you look at a movie like that and it's like, who has that much time?
Right. Well, but to Marcia's point, the aesthetic had been available to us for a long time. It had been established in the 30s that this is kind of how we characterize or at least mark a relationship, but then allowing actors to kind of free flow a little bit.
Well, and I think a big difference too is when you think about the films that depicted relationships between men in earlier decades, they were often goal-oriented. They were a caper film or they were, you know, a chain gang film or a war film. It was like the California Split, you know, you say it's a gambling film, but it's like nothing. And husbands, there's not stories and plot driving. And that's a characteristic of the 70s, in contrast to earlier decades, too.
You also talked about the fact that this idea that we're talking about, buddy flick, spans many genres, including sci-fi. Let's listen to a clip from the 75 flick, A Boy and His Dog.
This is Adam Hewlin. I live in Chatham County, and I'm a filmmaker and the co-creator and programmer for Cinema Overdrive at Mission Valley Cinema in Raleigh. My choice for the most unique buddy film of all time is A Boy and His Dog, made by Elcher Jones, starring Don Johnson and Jason Robards. It was made in that era just before Star Wars, and there was a lot of dystopia. This dystopia is a barren desert landscape that takes place after World War IV, and there's nothing but dirt and people who are trying their best to survive. Don Johnson plays a teenage boy named Vic who has a relationship with his dog who he has a telepathic relationship with. And the good flip on this that makes it interesting is that the dog is highly intelligent and Vic is about as dumb as a bag of hammers. Yet they have like a symbiotic relationship where they help each other survive the landscape.
Your continued narrow-minded refusal to believe in Over the Hill is possibly costing us a better life, you know.
Over the hill, my ass.
Well, when do we start looking for it again?
As soon as I get my heart started.
I mean, let's stop
procrastinating. I know what you mean, Over the Hill, where the deer and the antelope play, and it's warm and clean, and we can relax and have fun. And then they grow food right out of the ground. How do you like that pipe dream?
It's called farming.
Oh, I believe you. Now tell me how you saw the whole wonderful thing with your baby blues.
Never said I saw it. I said I heard about it.
And from who?
From whom, and you know from whom.
And whom the hell's gonna believe a police dog? I'm sorry, Blood. I believe you about Over the Hill. Hell, I believe anything you tell me. And even if we don't know for sure, it's worth checking on, right?
Whatever you say.
The movie is completely misanthropic, and no one gets off easy. Its uncompromising nature is one of the things that really stands out for it.
There's a filmmaker and co-creator of the film series Cinema Overdrive, Adam Hewlin, talking about his favorite best buddy flick, A Boy and His Dog. Tell us about this. A man and animal. I guess that one hasn't come up yet.
Yeah. Well, I mean, there are a lot of cross-species friendships in films. Like the one that immediately comes to mind for me is something like Black Stallion or thinking about Old Yeller, where you have, in that case, not characters who speak, but these important relationships between people and animals. And this is just a great kind of post-apocalyptic, very strange and wonderful film imagination of how animals might you know, evolve in the future to help us after our fourth war. We're a couple of ways still.
That's or depends on how you count. We may be up to number 9 already. We just don't count that way.
Well, it's a very, very dark comedy that's kind of related to Planet of the Apes in a way, isn't it?
Absolutely.
That we're ceding our mastery of the planet to what we would call in this world an animal.
But Planet of the Apes is more adversarial between species.
It is, but it's the de-evolution of man and the evolution of animals.
Absolutely.
Yeah, and when it becomes man against, you know, the remainder. I mean, I think the whole question of the remnant and the kind of relationships they form over and against a world that is totally unfamiliar to them. I mean, it's a world in which the next step could prove some kind of disaster that you never imagined. Different kinds of friendships, I suppose.
Yeah, well, and it's kind of like, and we're not going to end up talking about any of these films, but Man and Machine is another kind of friendship. And you think about the adversary of something like 2001, where it's like machine becomes the enemy, and then there's the films in which the machine helps you through things, but usually with some kind of complication.
By the way, did the voice of the dog also sound like the voice of the car in Knight Rider to you? I don't know. I just heard
it. You know,
a car.
I looked up the name of the actor who voiced the dog, and it was completely an unfamiliar name to me. But he must have been a big voice actor of the day.
Well, let's move on. 1981. Here's an interesting pick again. Raiders of the Lost Ark, which, again, you might not consider a buddy flick, but it is one that one of our listeners picked. Let's listen.
I'm Tom Smith. I'm a retired filmmaker. I worked in features for about 25 years. My favorite buddy film that I worked on was Raiders of the Lost Ark. Now, you may not think it's a buddy film because it's a man and a woman. It's Indiana Jones and Marion who are together in this adventure. But it has all the markings of a typical buddy film. They help each other out and go through many adventures together. When the film was in rough cut and shown to people who were working on it, Marsha Lucas, George Lucas's wife, she thought the film ended too quickly. And she said, well, what happened to Marion? And they said, well, I don't know. And she said, well, you got to settle the Marion thing. So they went out and reshot a scene where Indiana Jones appears to be coming down the Capitol steps. He accidentally meets Marion.
You don't look very happy.
Fools. Bureaucratic
fools.
What'd
they say?
They don't know what they've got there.
Well, I know what I've got here. Come on. Buy a drink. You know. A drink?
And they take off, and that's the last of the film, except for the warehouse scene. So it was a great adventure for me to work on this film. I worked on visual effects, and I've worked on lots of films, and this was probably the most exciting one.
It's retired filmmaker Tom Smith talking about his favorite best buddy film, Raiders of the Lost Ark. Laura Boyes and Marsha Gordon are
super cool call-in.
Yeah, kind of great behind the scenes there. Yeah. Great story.
I love movies where the male and female characters have a friendship and that it's not all about the romance. And you would think there would be a lot of them, but there aren't.
Yeah, well, and where there's adventure and, you know, the kind of antics that you might expect from a same-gender friendship film.
Right, and it's then, like Nick and Nora Charles kind of thing.
Exactly, even if there's always a little bit of romance tied into it.
Yeah.
Let's go up to 1982 and the film Diner.
My name is Sarah Stein. I live in Raleigh. My favorite buddy film is Diner. It's about four young men who have grown up together and who continue to spend all their time together. They pursue women in various ways, but the real deep emotional connection and meaningful relationship in their lives is each other. It's just an absolutely hilarious and also very moving film about a small town, working class group of young guys.
You want to finish that?
Yeah, I'm going to finish it. I paid for it. I'm not going to give it to you.
If you're not going to finish it, I would eat it. But if you're going to eat it, you're going to...
What do you want? Say the words.
No, go ahead. You're going to eat it. You eat it. That's all right.
Say the words. I want the roast beef sandwich. Say the words, and I'll give you a piece.
Would you guys cut this out? I mean, every time. Anything.
Well, if he doesn't talk, he just...
Well, you know what he means, right?
Yeah, I know what he means, but he beats around the bush. If he'd say the words, I'd give him a piece.
One simple question you get. You know what your problem is? You don't chew your food. That's why you get so irritable. It lumps. You have, like, roast beef in your heart. It just stays there.
Oh, Modell, you're really, really getting me mad now. My blood is boiling.
You know, you two play against me. That's what the problem is. You're both on each other's side.
I saw it in 1982, and I saw it four times within the month of April in 1982. My daughter was overdue. First of all, I needed to go into the air conditioning. And the second thing was I thought I would just laugh my way into labor. I'm not sure that that worked, but I saw a great film that I love to this day.
Sarah Stein telling us why she loved the film Diner today on The State of Things. Yeah. Well, again, this is a film in a lot of ways going back to California Split that's kind of about nothing but sort of wonderful.
Yeah, I mean, really nothing at all. And as a matter of fact, the female characters are super, super ancillary in this film, even though it's all about getting married and relationships. But as you can tell from that scene, that lineage of guys sitting around talking to each other about inane things, I mean, that's really what this film is. And, you know, you either kind of love that or not.
Well, there are different eras of friendship in your life. Do you keep your old friends from elementary school and high school? Well, if you're living in the same town, maybe you do. But if you move away, then you get a new set of friends that perhaps takes a higher priority in your life.
Yeah, and this is kind of a late-age teenager coming-of-age story, too. And so that's almost a whole other kind of friendship film, which is a kind of group of people or a pair of people, going through life and navigating the transitions between being young and being an adult.
And remembering those friendships, not living them in real time. Let's take a look at Stand By Me.
My name is Kua'ila Bea, and I live in Durham, North Carolina. Stand By Me is one of my favorite buddy movies because it came out in a time where I was younger, but I still got the coming-of-age story. And a good coming-of-age story with friends is always going to be something that sticks with you. One of, I think, my favorite scenes is when they finally found the body of the dead boy who had been struck by the train. And they encountered this gang of boys. These boys wanted to collect the bounty on finding the body, and they wouldn't let them.
You guys have two choices. You either leave quietly, we take the body. Or you stay, we beat the shit out of you. We take the body. What do you say, kid?
You're not taking him. Nobody's taking him.
And they actually stood up to the older boys who had always constantly harassing them. It was just a really cool thing for me to see.
There's a clip from the 1986 film Stand By Me. We're talking about it today on The State of Things. Movies on the Radio with Laura Boys and Marcia Gordon.
Well, it occurs to me between that and Diner and then just thinking about American Graffiti, about this wave of kind of nostalgia looking back to the 1950s, films that were about growing up in male friendships in particular. And so, I mean, it's kind of interesting to think that there's this kind of cluster of films in that time period that's really looking back on that decade.
A perfect example of a coming-of-age story that sort of is masquerading as a buddy film because explicitly, one of the kids is shown as an adult looking back,
right.
Reminiscing about this very formative incident in his life.
Well, and, it's also interesting to think is that are these films operating in this really nostalgic way and romanticizing their youth, or is it a more kind of critical and cynical look back at that time in your life?
Well, and what does that add to the film? Again, making this nostalgic versus either placing it in that time or making it a contemporary film. And a lot of those were clustered in the 80s, although I guess there was a fair amount of nostalgia in the late 70s, too, as well. So let's this one is a fairly unconventional film. I had not heard of it until it came to our attention when we put out the call. Let's listen to a clip from With Nall and I.
My name is David Burris. I'm from Raleigh, North Carolina. So I'm a film director and television producer. My favorite buddy film of all time is With Nall and I because it captures an essential moment in one's life where you have to decide whether you're going to be a grown-up or whether you're going to follow your childhood fantasies. And it's about two actors who are at that point in their lives in London. They're about to turn 30, so they're having to make a big decision about whether they're going to be actors or whether they're going to be quote-unquote real people.
We got soup. I'm not getting any soup.
Coffee.
Why'd you use a cup like any other human being?
Why don't you wash up occasionally like any other human being?
How dare you? How dare you?
How dare you call me inhumane?
I didn't call you inhumane. You merely imagined it. Calm down.
I'm going to do the washing up.
No, you can't. It's impossible, I swear. I've looked into it. Listen to me, listen to me. There are things in there. There's a tea bag growing. You haven't slept in 60 hours. You're in no state to tackle it. Wait till the morning. We'll go in together.
This is the morning. Stand aside.
You don't understand. I think there may be something living in there. I think there may be something alive.
What do you mean? A rat?
It's possible. It's possible.
Oh, Christ almighty. The entire thing's gone rotten. I don't know what's in here.
The misadventures that they go on as they're in this quandary in their life is equally hilarious and equally heartbreaking.
There it is, David. That's TV producer and film director David Burris talking about his best buddy film, the 1987 film Withnall and I. A strange film.
The best buddies here are Richard E. Grant and Paul McGann, who he looks so familiar. Oh, he was a minor Doctor Who, a one-off. Very interesting. But Richard E. Grant, of course, is a fantastic British character actor. And even though this movie was made in the 80s, there is something very 70s about, once again, this aimlessness. Richard E. Grant plays the dominant friend. So it's really...
And it is a recollection. It's a flashback, right, to his days, the writer's days in the 1960s.
Yes,
right?
very funny.
Weird stuff. And great line in the film. We've accidentally gone on vacation and we need your help. I'll never forget that line. We're going to take a break right here. Film experts Laura Boyes and Marcia Gordon. Laura is the film curator at the North Carolina Museum of Art. Marcia, a film professor at North Carolina State. We're talking about your best friend films on the state of things. And we'll start off with the film Beaches when we return. Stay with us. This is The State of Things. I'm Frank Stachow. My guest today, film experts Laura Boyes and Marcia Gordon, here with me on Movies on the Radio, where we're talking about friendship in the movies. And we can start with another classic best buddy film, a 1988 movie called Beaches.
My name is Regina Williams. I live in Durham, North Carolina, and my favorite buddy movie is Beaches. I love the movie because it's such a reflection of the friendship I have with my best friend, Lisa. And we've been friends for over 30 years. And we've been there through the thick and thin. And the movie is really about a true friendship between two women.
Why? I waited for you. I'm here now. I want to go. I don't want Victoria to see me here. Are you sure? Are you really sure? Absolutely. Okay. Okay. Who do I speak to about getting Hillary Whitney released?
Do you know how sick she is?
Yes, I know how sick she is, and so does she. If she wants to go,
we can let her go.
I have to talk to the doctor in charge. Please.
It's such a tearjerker. Like, even now, talking about it, I get teary-eyed. And it touches me because that's what friendship is really all about. It's about being there in the good times and the bad times. And even if you're going to lose that friend, still stepping in to make sure that you're doing everything you can for her.
That's Regina Williams, who's talking about her favorite best buddy film, the 1988 drama Beaches. I'm here with Marcia Gordon from NC State and Laura Boyes from the North Carolina Museum of Art. So finally, we're talking about women. And
finally. And of course, we hear the stringed instruments come in. And so this is a classic, as the listener said, tearjerker and weepy. And so it's kind of interesting to think it's not that there are only female friendship films that are made in the melodrama mode, but that those are the kinds that often, I think, get picked because they are these kind of emotional reflections on what it means to have your closest friend throughout life and throughout, well, death in this case.
Well, it's interesting that there's a different level of emotion and sharing in the women's movies, except for Stand By Me. I'm not sure that any of the other friendships really discuss these sort of emotional issues in the same way. 'Cause Beaches is, right. You know, it's a film about, you know, lifetimes. So it doesn't have the same I mean, a lifetime is aimless, maybe, but it doesn't have the same aimlessness of something like California.
Well,
Split.
I think the difference is a lot of these male friendship films are very surface level in right. terms of the friendship, and maybe that's just the way we imagine male friendships. I don't know, Frank. Maybe that's the way they are. I don't know.
It's the way they are.
Okay.
It's just the way they are. We talk about like a roast beef sandwich.
Yes, that's perfect.
And we talk about life and death.
Yeah. Name the seven dwarves. Game over. I'm going to bed. There's not anything else to say. No, I do think it is true that you're onto something there. That just looking at the surface of how men react, maybe that gets you something close to the competitive nature of male. I don't know some of that, but it really is a superficial look. And as you say, in this film, I think the dynamic is much different, isn't it?
Right. There's a kind of sharing of an emotional life that you rarely see in a male buddy film.
Absolutely. And the comedy. It's not that there aren't moments of laughter in films like Beaches, and there certainly are. But that's not the dominant note of that film.
A lot more humor in a film like Steel Magnolias, right?
My name is Kate Harshberger, and I'm from Chapel Hill, North Carolina. And one of my favorite buddy movies is Steel Magnolias. It's a group of buddies, which is what I grew up with. I didn't have one particular best friend, and I like how the movie highlights that you need a group of friends to support you. And it applied when I first saw it in middle school, and it applies today with my mom friends around town.
I don't think I can take this. I don't think I can take this. I just want to hit somebody till they feel as bad as I do. I just want to hit something. I want to hit it hard.
Here. Hit this. Go ahead, Malin. Slap her.
Are you crazy?
Hit her. Are you high, Clary?
Clary, have you lost your mind?
We'll sell T-shirts saying I slapped Weezer Boudreau. Malin, you just missed a chance of a lifetime. Half a Chicopin parish will give the eye teeth to take a whack of Weezer.
Oh. I look back to Steel Magnolias, and I can see that was a message that they were sending to young women that, you know, you make these special relationships, and it will carry you through your life, through good and bad things.
Yeah, that's Kate Harshberger talking about her favorite film, 1989 film Steel Magnolias, one of our listeners' best buddy films. And I think it's the Chickabin County line that I would put on my T-shirt. But anyway,
well, Chickabin Parish. I think there's sort of a subgenre of movies about Southern women, too, that there's just something, I'm thinking, you know, off the top of my head, Fried Green Tomatoes, you know, that there's something about the way women bond in the South over food and family that really is unique in comparison to other regions.
And this is also a film that's one of these great, like, all-star female everyone was in this movie, right? Dolly Parton and Sally Field and Shirley MacLaine, Daryl Hannah, Julia Roberts. And so it's also a great opportunity for a bunch of strong female actresses to be in a film together. And there's just not that many films, you know, now or then.
Sadly, no.
No.
That's the case. And so that's part of the magic, is getting to see all these great actresses perform together.
Well, and the ensemble cast, as you say, that's great. I mean, if you've got these film the stars who you know are going to bring them in, and then you can create these relationships around them. And I'm thinking of, the Big Chill, for instance, which may not, strictly speaking, be a buddy film. I mean, it's a snapshot, and all the relationships took place in real time, you know, out of your view. But those are great films that, you know, rely heavily on really terrific acting and you know, byplay.
Yeah.
Yeah, on the State of Things today, we're talking about buddies. We're all friends here.
We're all friends here. Buddies.
Through thick and thin.
We're buddies.
Well, you know, this also reminds me, thinking of Steel Magnolias, I'm thinking two of the films that didn't get named, Thelma and Louise is one. All of the Bob
What's
Hope.
What's wrong with these listeners?
Well,
no Thelma and Louise.
It's amazing. I mean, it's a little surprising.
Thelma and
Louise.
Can't
name them all.
You know, you see it now and you go, really? Is that the only option? You know, it's
You're talking about the ending or are you talking about the movie?
The ending. You know, and
it was that way when it came out.
Yeah.
Bob Hope and Bing Crosby. I mean, all those road pictures.
Road to Morocco.
Okay.
The spitting camel.
Did you know they were going to make one in 1977? They were actually going to come up with, it would have been probably the final one. It was going to be Road to the Fountain of Youth.
And But Robert Altman was going to direct it. Is that right?
And instead, it would have to be Road to the Afterlife.
It had to be Road because sadly, Bing Crosby died that very year. But that's a little fun fact.
I'm glad that we're spared from that particular movie.
We can move on to the. Yeah, you're probably right.
Because they would have made fun of hippies, and it would have been awful. Yeah.
Mm.
Hey, we can move into the 90s now. A listener pick for the 1998 film Smoke Signals.
My name is Rob Phillips. I am a resident of Apex, North Carolina, and I absolutely love buddy movies. And one of my absolute favorite buddy movies is the film Smoke Signals, based on the writing of Sherman Alexie. And this really complicated, funny film uses a lot of pretty sophisticated techniques like matches on action and sound to sort of demonstrate how the two main characters, Victor, who's traveling to Arizona to recover the remains of his recently deceased father, is accompanied by his buddy, Thomas, who, between the two of them, they try to figure out their collective past and, of course, their individual identities. Probably the most famous scene from that film involves the two guys sitting on a bus together trying to figure out what it means to be a true Native American.
You know, Thomas, I don't know what you're talking about half the time. Why is that?
I don't know.
I mean, you just go on and on talking about nothing. Why can't you have a normal conversation? You're always trying to sound like some damn medicine man or something. I mean, how many times have you seen Dances with Wolves? 100, 200? Oh, jeez. You have seen it that many times, haven't you? Don't you even know how to be a real Indian?
I guess not.
No wonder, jeez. I guess I'll have to teach you then, ain't it? First of all, quit grinning like an idiot. Indians ain't supposed to smile like that. Get stoic.
I guess with the fluidity of the road and the journey, they're able to kind of examine things that maybe they wouldn't normally examine if they had stayed home.
Rob Phillips telling us why he likes the 1998 film Smoke Signals as one of the best buddy films today in the state of things.
And it's so unusual in that it was written, directed, and starring Native American actors. It's a very interesting view into a world we don't often get to see.
Well, and I'm really glad somebody called in to talk about a film that was not just starring white actors and performers. Obviously, Hollywood history is very, very white. And it makes me think about those interracial buddy films that came out in the 1980s with people like Eddie Murphy and Mel Gibson, not together, but I don't think. But, you know, that was kind of a sub-genre of...
Will Smith. I mean, there was a whole franchise.
Right. The fish out of water, mismatched buddy.
Whatever film. Yeah. So, yeah, that seems to have been one way that Hollywood could imagine having non-white people, but always.
But those, I mean, interestingly enough, the fish out of water, the playing on stereotype. Yeah. In other words, imagine a black man with money.
Right.
I mean, that was sort of the play, or, you know, a wealthy cop who right. happens to be African-American. In other words, you have to have the stereotype as the foundation for the code to work. But it's interesting in this case that if you're trying to get at identity, you're not working with nostalgia anymore. You're not trying to bring you back to those halcyon days when white people ruled the world.
Right.
It's a bit about, look, this is who we are, and a way at this is to find out how these complicated relationships between human beings
right.
would play out through the lens and through the filter of the minority status in the United States.
Well, and for road movies in particular, where so much, you know, I don't mean to sound stupid, but is the journey, you know, like mm-hmm. where you're just in a car kind of talking to someone else in that mode. It also allows you to explore things that are not as just kind of plot or joke driven as a lot of these films we've been talking about are.
Marcia, you picked the film Ghost World. Tell us about that.
I did. It's always hard to pick something, but this is a film that I really like to teach at NC State, especially in my film and literature class. It's based on a graphic novel by Daniel Clowes about these two young women who grow up together, have somewhat of a antagonistic relationship at times, but have a really nice unconventional friendship.
How much is this?
That's, not for sale.
Wait a minute, it says $5.
I know, that's a mistake. I'm not selling it. What was that all about? I thought everything must go. Yeah, right. Like, I'm really gonna let some with a soul patch own Goofy Gus. How much for this dress? God, I can't believe you're selling that. That's $500. What? $500. You're crazy.
should be like $2.
I was wearing that when I lost my virginity.
Well, why do I care about that?
Well, why do you want it? I mean, it would look stupid on you anyway.
God.
Clip of the 2001 film Ghost World, with Marcia Gordon's pick today on The State of Things. Marcia.
Yeah, well, so one of the things I really like about this film, and that's the characters are Enid and Rebecca, is that, I mean, it is a coming-of-age film, but it's not at all a conventional girly relationship. It's not a melodrama. It's really about characters who are kind of outsiders and misfits and trying to figure out where they belong. And they have, you know, like this garage sale incident that allows them to talk about things in their past and their lives, and that also airs how hard it is to let go of things as you're growing up. I mean, that's the whole point of the garage sale.
And rather than pursuing a cute boy, I mean, they end up with Steve Buscemi with a very strange relationship as a record collector.
And that even is something that's not in the graphic novel. The graphic novel is much more focused on the female friendship, and in the Zweigoff adaptation, that relationship is actually added because I think you have to have some kind of romantic something. It can't just be a film about female friends.
So do your students find this to be still relevant to their lives?
Absolutely, especially the female students. When I teach this, they really connect with this text and with the film.
Do you think these, I mean, we've sort of done these chronologically, and I wonder if you sense that these kind of films have changed much over time, if there's a kind of fundamental change through the decades?
That's a hard question. First thing that I thought of when you said that is, what are the films coming out now that are like buddy films? Well, they're like superhero buddy films. So everything is like kind of steroided.
Can a superhero have a best friend?
Sure.
I don't know.
Sure. Batman and Robin.
I know, but then your best friend is always in jeopardy.
That's true.
But that's what really makes
that's
it
That's
cool.
what life is all
that's
about.
That's like what life is
no,
all about.
No, I beg to differ.
Has it gotten any easier? I mean, I'm going back to 68 or 69, whenever Midnight Cowboy came out. And again, this is a film I saw dozens of times in a tuxedo, because we wore a tuxedo.
Nice. You were inappropriately dressed for that movie in particular.
Unbelievable. Yeah, I would spend, I actually held audiences in thrall in the Canisius High School cafeteria, because I could do whole scenes from that thing, and I could go back and forth between Joe Buck and Ratso Rizzo, and, you know, so anyway, have fond memories.
Is that how you got your job here at WUNC?
I was an usher in Los Buffalo Theater when I was 17. I've been in show business ever since, and I'm doing it. So what do we do next time, do you think? What do you want to talk about? Crime?
I think we're talking about crime.
Let's do that.
Yep.
So think about, and that's pretty broad. So we can do cops, we can do detectives, we can do, you know, lawyers and thrillers and however you...
Robbers.
Robbers.
Not forget the robbers.
Robbers, the bad
True
guys
crime.
Sometimes
There should
win.
Be good stuff.
Bonnie
Lots
and
of
Clyde,
things.
Bonnie and Clyde, all those things. So whatever you consider crime, we're going to put out the word and ask you to join us next time on Movies on the Radio. That's going to be the topic. But for today, thank you so much. Marcia Gordon, film professor at North Carolina State. Laura Boyes, film curator at the North Carolina Museum of Art. Thanks so much for being on the program.
Always fun,
thank
Frank.
Thank you.
And thank you for listening. You can find out more about Laura and Marcia and the films and everything we do at our website, stateofthings.org. We're looking at crime movies next time. Send us an email at sot@wunc.org or tweet us at #SOTMovie. Our program is produced by Laura Lee, Anita Rao, Will Michaels, and Charlie Shelton-Ormond. Robin Copley's our technical director. Brent Wolf, WUNC's news director. North Carolina Public Radio is a broadcast service of the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill. I'm Frank Stachow.